This is Audible.
Blackstone Publishing presents Marvel Studios Avengers Infinity War. Marvel, Thanos, Titan Consumed. By Barry Liga. This book is read by Tom Taylorson. There are as many tales of the origins of the mad Titan Thanos as there are stars remaining in the sky. This is but one of them. It is also the truth. Time. We live in a prism, not a line. Chapter 1. I've snapped my fingers, and I am adrift in myself, alone with my past, my present. The sheer existence of me is at once a weighty and a weightless thing. Time is not an arrow or a line or any other convenient metaphor. Time is not an abstract notion. Time is a stone. With the stone, all history is open to me. I am in history. I am history. I witness it and relive it and experience it in the same quantum instant. For the first time in years, I behold the orange swaddled orb that is Titan. From a distance of thousands of kilometers, the planet looks the same as when I left, with no indication as to the havoc that lurks beneath the haze. And then it's years later, and my forces wage combat against Her Majesty Cathar's troops aboard the Executrix. Bodies spill into space as the Leviathans mass for a second attack run. And now Korath tells Ronan, "Thanos is the most powerful being in the universe." And Ronan, the fool, responds, "Not anymore." Unmoored from the present, observing without interfering, I watch my life and my certainty as they play out. I am the foregone conclusion to my own prophecy. Korath's warning has come true, and now I truly am the most powerful being in the universe, perceiving all reality from the vantage point of ultimate power. Not much more than a boy, I tilt the glass to my lips. The liquid within is green, bubbly, and too sweet, tasting of melon and elderberries and ethyl alcohol. I am a child, and my father tells me, "Your mother went mad the moment she laid eyes on you." There is a softness to his voice noticed only in retrospect, with adult eyes laid upon the childish past. This changes nothing. Everything is done. Everything will be done. Years later, my ship launches from the surface of Titan, bearing me into the unknown. I tell myself that everything I know lurks beneath that haze, and then I tell myself that it doesn't matter. Swaddled in the verdant energies of the time stone, my mind traverses decades at the speed of thought, spinning the jewel of my life from facet to facet. "You'll die there, Titan," says Vathlas, choking on his own blood and Kebi's poison. "You'll die in the glory that is Asgard." I watch, paralyzed and helpless, as Gamora swings her battle staff, and Dakan Ro postures and threatens on my viewscreen, and the other speaks to me in the wreckage of the Chitauri staging base.
"Humans, they are not the cowering wretches we were promised. They stand. They are unruly and therefore cannot be ruled. To challenge them is to court death."
I am striding through the bodies of Asgardians, the dead remnants of that once proud civilization, as Ebony Maw proselytizes to the few who still live. I am beating the Hulk nearly to death, and hurling Gamora from the cliff on Vormir. And then, years previous, a voice, the voice of my only friend.
"You're a coward, Thanos, a coward. You hide behind this ship, behind the other and the Chitauri, and now behind those girls."
Years leapfrog one another, spurting ahead in an instant. And I am aboard Sanctuary. The protective doors to my vault slide open, and the gauntlet glimmers there in the half-light, not quite gold. I have seen this moment before. I have lived it. It is happening for the first time, the second time, the millionth time. I reach for it. Fine, I say. Oh. Reality. Truth is a mistress harsher than death. Chapter 2. The problem with Titan was that it was perfect. And even as a child, Thanos knew nothing was truly perfect. Every diamond had its flaw, and every saintly soul had its black spot of guilt, shame, or restless abnegation. Titan, too, suffered from an imperfection. That imperfection, as best he could tell, was Thanos himself. Son of Alars, the high mentor of Titan, architect of the Eternal City, and Sui-san, his absent mother, Thanos was, at birth, a shock to his people. His appearance was a jolt of adrenaline to a body at rest. Distinguished from Titan's populace by dint of his deformation and purplish hue, he was prominent in ways and for reasons beyond his control, yet fixed permanently in his very physical being. On Titan, the people's flesh reflected a range of splendid colors. But none was purple, the color of death, the color of ill omen, save Thanos. From the vast salt sea on the other side of the planet to the glimmering bronze range of cryovolcanoes just outside the Eternal City, Titan was a united world, more than the sum of its parts, a resplendent and cohesive whole. The Eternal City was a perfect blend of architecture and engineering, its soaring spires and towers nestled together in a collection of utmost harmony, a world absolutely in tune with itself. Except for Thanos. His skin color, along with a series of vertical ridges, furrows that made his flesh look as though it had been raked, widened his expansive jaw. These traits marked him a deviant, a mutated thing. Had his father been anyone but Alars, his mother anyone but Sui-san, he most likely would have been consigned to a medical facility somewhere, poked and prodded his whole life, quarantined from polite society. Instead, he was left in Alar's care. Sui-san disappeared shortly after his birth. He walked at 6 months, not the drunken toddle of a baby, but the confident stride of a man. He could already hold himself erect, control the movement of his head and neck. He had complete coordination of his limbs, and his bearing was that of an adult. 2 days shy of his first birthday, he spoke. Not a word, but rather a full sentence. Father, will there be a birth celebration for me, and will Mother attend? He'd been capable of speech for weeks, but had waited until he'd fully parsed the nuances of sentence structure to issue his first words. Before either of those milestones, he knew he was different, in a world that prized conformity and unanimity above all else. Mother will not attend, Alars had said. If his father was surprised by Thanos's speech and his diction, he did not show it. I will arrange for friends. I will arrange for. Those words preceded most of Alars's statements. Thanos's father rarely touched his son, rarely even looked at him. In regard to Thanos's needs, he only ever said, I will arrange for, and then did just that, with efficiency and aplomb. Thanos wanted for nothing, needed nothing, except to belong. As good as his word, Alars arranged for friends, a collection of androids designed to look and act like toddlers. They were programmed to distract Thanos and keep him dumbly happy and content. In time, he'd figured out their programming and rewrote their algorithms. He now had a coterie of robotic servants that amused him, but accomplished little else. His restless mind craved more.
Very well,
Alars relented. School.
Generations ago, it had been the common practice to install children in thought cribs and educate them through direct cerebral interface. That practice had long fallen out of favor by the time of Thanos' birth. It was now fashionable to add an interactive social element to education, placing a group of children together in a school where they could theoretically enhance one another's learning and also facilitate socialization. Thanos was excited by the prospect of school. Other than the reprogrammed androids, he'd had no companionship, and he looked forward to meeting other children his age.
Be polite,
Alars told him on their way to the education complex in their floater.
Speak only when directed to.
Yes, father.
Thanos bobbed his head in agreement. Through the clear shell over the floater, he could see other floaters, the tops of buildings, and the distant mountain ranges of Titan. His world was beautiful and at peace, and he longed to explore every part of it.
The teachers have been warned about your appearance,
Alars reminded him.
Try not to do or say anything upsetting or untoward.
His appearance. Almost unconsciously, he ran one finger along his jawline. At some point in Titan's distant past, for reasons no one could any longer remember, the color purple had become associated with death, a connection that persisted to the present. When Titans died, their bodies were covered with purple shrouds. The lights in their residences were tuned to the violet portion of the spectrum for the grieving period. He'd first encountered this association when his father received a visitor in their home. Thanos was 4 years old, and the visitor was an elderly woman, a friend of Alars's parents, seeking advice from the high mentor of Titan. She wore shades of purple from head to toe, including a veil covering her face, a veil that was the precise color of Thanos' skin. The coincidence of her clothing and his own skin color thrilled Thanos, as coincidences often do to children. When she left, he babbled to his father about the color of her clothes, about the way the veil so perfectly matched his own flesh. And Alars had explained, in blunt language, that she wore that color because she was in mourning. She was a widow, and so she wore the color of death. Thanos' excitement had curdled. Of all the hues his maladapted genes could have chosen to express, why did it have to be purple? Now at the education complex, Alars led him down a corridor, peering around and occasionally sniffing in barely disguised annoyance.
Uninspired design and workmanship,
he commented.
Do not allow your surroundings to infect your breeding, Thanos.
I will not, father,
Thanos promised, fighting to match his father's disinterested deportment. Inside, he was ecstatic to be among his peers. He knew his father disapproved of expression of emotion, so he suppressed his excitement. At a doorway, father and son paused. Thanos waited as his father thumbed open the door. This would be the first time in his awareness that Thanos would be separated from his father for more than an hour or so. He opened his mouth to say something, but Alars nodded curtly at him and said,
Don't be late,
followed by, Learn well. Before turning and striding back down the corridor, they'd walked together. Thanos nodded to himself, then stepped into the education chamber. It was a smallish room with a series of 12 personal interface pods that could be arranged in any formation. At that moment, they were lined up in two ranks of 6 each, all facing the front of the chamber, where stood an adult in a gray tunic and slacks, his hands clasped behind his back. He had thick black hair, pomaded to his skull like a helmet, and skin the color of a pale morning sky. The teacher smiled and, to his credit, did an admirable job concealing his startled reflex at the sight of Thanos. But Thanos noted it. The school had been advised he was coming. They knew who and what he was, and yet still his appearance shocked.
And you must be Thanos,
the teacher said. Thanos thought it an absurd thing to say. Who else could he be? But the teacher's smile was pleasant, and Thanos bore in mind his father's admonitions. So he simply nodded and said,
Yes,
Class, welcome a new friend and fellow learner, Thanos. 11 of the pods rotated enough that the children within could get an unobstructed view of the newcomer. Thanos felt the frisson of panic at 22 eyes boring into him, then forced the panic away. They were children, like him. Take the empty pod, please, said the teacher. Today we'll be studying color and patterns. He scrambled into the pod. Its padded interior shifted into a cocoon as he settled into place. Now here, he was comfortable, in his element. The interface pod was an older model than the one he had at home, but it was serviceable. He ran a few updates on its firmware, then connected it to the pod at home. Colors and patterns. As the teacher spoke and the pod conjured images for him to absorb, he realized how incredibly bored he was already. He'd already learned about color from his father, from the nature of light to the manipulation of pigments. Patterns, from plaids to stripes, dots, and organics, were similarly old news to him. Was this really the best way for him to learn? He tamped down his impatience. He had wanted this, after all. He couldn't give up on it after a few minutes. With a sigh, he switched his pod to accelerated mode and flashed through the lesson at twice the speed. If the learning portion of school was dull, then at least there was the social aspect to look forward to. There was a break at noon for food and physical recreation. Thanos was no fool. He understood that the physical component was designed to tire out the students and make them more manageable. He felt he was already incredibly polite and deferential, having not pointed out two or three errors his teacher had made earlier. So he forsook the running around and wild play of his classmates, and instead sat quietly in a corner, studying a rudimentary hologram of a synthetic neural pathway. If improved, it would make synths much more lifelike. A cluster of children gathered not far from him. They spoke in hushes and murmurs, occasionally pointing in his direction. He did his best to ignore them, while at the same time wondering how he could engage them. Maybe this had been a mistake, this schooling. Maybe he should have stayed at home. He had not imagined himself the center of attention, a thing to be spoken of and not to. But just then, a girl named Gwynth approached him. "We have a question for you," she said. And before he could say anything, she went ahead and asked it. "Why are you purple?" Thanos blinked with something like confusion. No one had ever asked that simple question before. She seemed more curious than frightened or disgusted. Perhaps his father had overestimated people's reaction to his appearance. "I'm not entirely sure," he admitted. "It's a mutation."
"A what?"
As they spoke, the other children gathered around them. Thanos tried to figure out the best way to explain it, but the truth was that he only partly understood it himself. There were things called genes that made people who and what they were. Something had gone wrong with one of his.
"Where are the genes?" Gwynth asked,
and ran her hands randomly over her body, feeling for them. Others followed suit. Thanos shook his head.
"They're tiny, microscopic."
A thought occurred to him, and a light blossomed within. Here and now, he'd been presented with a great opportunity. He had the attention of his fellows. They didn't seem afraid of him or disgusted, just curious. If he could explain some part of himself to them. The previous night, he'd memorized the layout of the school so that he would not get lost. Now he led the group, about 10 of them, back down the hallways to a bio lab for the older students. It was unused at the moment, and it had everything Thanos needed. He arranged his retinue around a workbench with a microscope filter, then rummaged around until he found a needle, typically used for pinning down samples. He had a different use for it. As the clutch of children watched, their breaths held in unison, Thanos pricked the tip of his thumb with the needle. A gasp went up as the red bubble formed. He squeezed a drop of blood onto the microscope filter, and a light filled the room. A holographic image of his own blood now projected into the air. A chorus of oohs and ahs rose up from the other children. Pleased, Thanos fiddled with the controls to sharpen and clarify the image. Globules pulsed and danced across the room. The other children pointed and laughed with delight at the show.
"This is my blood," Thanos explained. "And for comparison..."
He took the hand of a boy near him and poked at his thumb with the needle. A spot of blood welled up there, and the boy shrieked as though gutted. No one was pointing and laughing now. There was a moment of group silence, counterbalanced by the boy's ongoing cry of pain and shock, and then the rest of the children howled as though they too had been jabbed. And there now was the fear his father had promised. It washed around Thanos. It enveloped him. Thanos dropped the boy's hand and stood in stunned silence as the screams grew higher and higher around him. Later he waited in the office of the school's proctor, alone. A sound caught his attention and he looked up. Alars stood in the doorway.
"This experiment is a failure," his father announced. "Come home."
That night, Thanos stole out of bed and listened at the door to his father's cogitarium, the study where Alars spent most of his hours in deep thought. A voice not his father's came to him through the door.
"You know I revere you, Alars. We all do."
"Then speak plainly,"
Alars demanded.
"Your child, he's different."
"Indeed, you've noticed. I salute your perceptions."
Alar's sarcasm silenced the other for a moment. Then,
"Perhaps there is something more suitable for the child of the esteemed Alars than a pedestrian school."
"Without doubt,"
Alars said smoothly.
"Thank you for your time, your consideration, and your counsel."
Alars switched off the comms, and Thanos, straining, heard his father mutter, "Dolts." It was irregular, to say the least, for a child to be withdrawn from school and taught by a parent. But Alars's shadow was long, his fame all-encompassing. And besides, everyone knew it was for the best. While his father's specialty was synthetic intelligence, he was something of a polymath, and also dabbled in materials science and architecture, which had led to his prominence on Titan. There was only so much livable terrain on the planet, and Alars had figured out how best to use that space, and furthermore, how to protect it from the vicissitudes of nature. His skills translated into considerable fame and political power, making the absence of his wife and the grotesqueness of his son all the more shameful. He was an indifferent father, but a challenging and unfathomably brilliant teacher. While Thanos resented the loss of the opportunity for companionship and friends, he had to admit, begrudgingly, that Alars was a more fitting teacher for him. Praise was rare. His father would sometimes comment on Thanos's intelligence as though it were a fait accompli, as though its very existence made Thanos's enormous mental capacity exceptional and unexceptional at the same time. Lessons were quick and expected to be passed with 100% understanding.
"Your intellect is your primary and best tool," his father said once in a scarce shared moment. "Someday, if your achievements merit, you may have the honor of being called Thanos, or perhaps even Tehanos, though I'd advise you not to set your sights so high,"
Alars cautioned.
"I am still lonely,"
Thanos said, struggling to keep a note of whining out of his voice. He knew his father loathed such childish things. Alars sighed in defeat.
"I will arrange,"
he began. Alars was as good as his word, and did indeed arrange something. He brought Thanos an actual, living boy. Several of them, actually. To vie for the role of friend. Only one passed muster. Sinta was, by definition, Thanos's best friend, since he was Thanos's only friend. Lean where Thanos was broad, Sinta had an enviably smooth, normal-sized chin, and skin the acceptable color of raw peaches. He was possessed of a sunny disposition, in contrast to Thanos's taciturn, withdrawn nature. As the years passed, Thanos suspected that Alars had paid, blackmailed, or threatened Sintas' parents into having their child become his son's friend. His father would never admit to such a quotidian and desperate tactic. But by the age of 10, Thanos could prize out certain words and phrases that led him confidently to this conclusion. Cruelly, fate and genetics had cursed him with a phenomenal mind, one that made him all the more keenly aware of his deformation and of the singular nature of his ostracism. From what he gleaned by watching news and entertainment hollows, he realized the depth of his isolation, but was powerless to rectify it. And yet Sintas himself, regardless of what pressures had been brought to bear on his parents, seemed genuinely to enjoy Thanos' company. Of all the children who had been paraded before him to audition for the role of friend, only Sintas possessed an easy smile, a laconic and relaxed mien, and the glint of trouble in his eyes. Thanos attempted to resist liking him, and failed.
"You are the first thing my father has brought to me that I actually enjoy,"
Thanos said at one point early in their friendship. Sintas grinned. He was too intelligent for his age, too, though not nearly as brilliant as Thanos.
"I'm not a thing," he reminded Thanos. "I'm a person."
Thanos grunted in assent.
"Of course."
They played together in the chambers Thanos shared with his father, never in public, never at Sintas' house. Thanos had figured out a way to paint with light, devising a series of data brushes that collected photons and froze them temporarily in place, and they spent hours painting the air, watching the holograms glimmer and shine before they eventually corroded and bled off like slow fireworks.
"Can I ask you a question?" Thanos said.
Sintas seemed surprised. He paused in mid-brushstroke.
"You never ask questions. You know everything already." "I wish that were true,"
Thanos admitted.
"There's much I do not know, especially with regard to one thing."
Sintas sat back. The holograms danced and sparkled around him, flickering dreams caught and dragged into the waking world.
"Ask."
Thanos hesitated. For the first time in his life, he understood the idea of being nervous.
"What is it like," he managed eventually, "to have a mother?"
Sintas laughed.
"Everyone has a mother, Thanos."
Had Thanos been capable of blushing, he would have done so at that moment.
"Biologically speaking, yes, but what is it like to have one, not merely to come from one?"
Sintas' eyes softened. He opened his mouth to speak, then closed it. Opened it again. Closed it. It took many such cycles before he found his voice.
"I don't know how to describe it to you," he confessed. "It's all I've ever known. It's all I've ever known."
Those words struck Thanos with a sharp pain he'd never experienced. More than the words, though, was the tone of Sintas' voice as he said them. There was a warmth and comfort there, and Thanos knew that this was what he was missing, the succor of his mother. As far as he could tell, every living thing on Titan had the love of its mother, except for him.
"I don't even know where she is," Thanos said. "One of the few secrets Alars has succeeded in keeping from me."
After a moment's hesitation, Sintas said,
"I know where she is."
By this point in his life, Thanos had the shape and height of an older child. His growth spurts were frequent and painful. At almost 1 2/3 meters tall, he had the appearance of an early adolescent, masking the mind of a genius. His skin had lightened somewhat since birth, but was still the hated and feared purple. He seldom ventured forth from his father's house. Alars had told him many times that it was best not to upset people. So today, Thanos wore a cloak with a hood that covered his head and hid his face in shadow. Dragging the tail of the cloak along the ground, he approached a specific building not with fear, but rather trepidation. Behind him, Sintas nodded, encouraging him forward. The building was nondescript and squat, a rare low structure in a city dominated by towering skyscrapers and floating edifices buoyed aloft by anti-gravity technology. Cinta had heard of it from his parents. They referred to it as a kind of hospital. Thanos knew what a hospital was, of course, a place where ailments were cured, injuries given balm. Was his mother ill? Is that why no one would let him see her? But in that case, why not just tell him? Why the secrecy and the shame? It didn't matter. His mother was in there. That was all he cared about. He hesitated just a moment at the door. He was a boy of 10, a child, and despite his intellect, or maybe because of it, he knew that the combination of his age and his appearance would not stand him in good stead here. He knew rejection lurked in his immediate future. He opened the door anyway. He went inside. Within, the air smelled of ozone and antiseptic. The walls and floors were dim and soft, the ceiling a series of lighted panels. He walked down the entry hall until he found another door, opened it, went inside. A man stood there, his furrowed brow the color of faded grass on an autumn day. He wore the black tunic and red epaulets of a doctor, but his expression was anything but comforting. "Thanos," he said in a disapproving tone. "I was told you were coming." Thanos and Cinta had told no one of their decision to come here. For the first time in his life, Thanos realized that he was being watched. All the time.
"I would like to see Sui-san,"
Thanos said with as much dignity and intensity as he could muster.
"My mother,"
he added. The doctor's eyes narrowed, and something like pity flickered there. Thanos suppressed the rage that rippled through him. He had no use for pity.
"I'm truly sorry," the doctor said. "I can't allow that."
"I didn't ask if you could allow it,"
Thanos said, marshaling all his outrage.
"Let me see my mother."
"You'll need to speak to your father about that," the doctor said, gesturing mysteriously. "If you don't leave, I'll have to have you removed. And I don't want to do that to you."
Speak to your father. He had. Since his very first words, "Will mother attend?" he had asked after his mother, had all but begged Alars to let him see her. But he had been stonewalled at every opportunity, denied, told by word and deed and inaction that he would never see Sui-san.
"Do not deny me,"
Thanos said, and balled his hands into fists. The doctor did not laugh at this sight. He cleared his throat and said,
"I will summon a security," and Thanos felt more than saw a red scrim of rage unfurl between him and the rest of the world. Without conscious thought, he flung himself at the doctor.
He was 10 years old and he was angry, and he was strong, and he had the advantage of youth, which does not know how to conserve its energies. The doctor howled and dropped back as Thanos attacked, leaping up to collide with the man's chest, knocking him to the ground, where Thanos's smaller stature was no disadvantage. In the instant it took for them to crash to the floor together, a light burst in Thanos's chest, and something heavy and sodden in him vanished. He felt lighter and happier than he'd ever felt, as though the world suddenly made absolute sense. That was only an instant, a click of a dial between ticks. His mind went blank with the impact on the floor, and he lashed out with both fists, pummeling the man's face, and soon Thanos's purple fists were smeared red with blood, and then strong hands grappled him from behind and dragged him away, screaming nonsense syllables, all his intelligence reduced to the raw meat of need and denial, the veneer of culture ripped away, leaving behind only an animal hauled away as its screams and bellows were swallowed by the soft, sound-dampening walls. Later, Alars came to him in his room. Thanos sat on the floor in a corner, swaddled in darkness, staring at his hands, which he held interlinked in his lap.
"Will the doctor recover?"
Thanos asked, a note of urgency in his voice.
"The one I hurt?"
Alars clucked his tongue.
The doctor is a new synthetic life form I bred specifically to care for your mother. Designed with enhanced empathy and compassion. Congratulations, Thanos. You bludgeoned to death something that was not truly alive, and something that was designed from the start not to know how to fight back.
Thanos twisted his hands together. They blurred as his eyes lost focus.
That facility, Alars went on, is off limits to you, Thanos. You were never told that, so I will not punish you for going there, or for the damage you caused to my creation.
His father glared sternly.
Go again, and the punishment will be severe.
Punishment. Thanos knew what that meant. The isolation room. A tiny chamber just off Alars's cogitarium. Thanos would be placed within. Lights and noise bombarded him constantly so he could not think. It was the worst thing he could imagine, the worst thing he'd ever suffered. But...
Mother is there,
Thanos said without looking up.
How can you hide her from me?
You were a bright boy. You can find other things to occupy your mind than searching for your mother. She is irrelevant to you.
Irrelevant?
Thanos shouted, rising.
She is my mother!
Alars did not so much as flinch.
She bore you. Nothing more. She has not seen you since the moment of your birth. She means nothing to you, and you mean nothing to her. Forget her, Thanos.
He gestured to Thanos' desk, and the holographic interface floating above and around it.
Return to your studies. You have a prodigious intellect, one that should not be distracted by such emotional concerns.
Yes, he had a prodigious intellect. He had words that could counter his father's argument, but in that moment, he was still just a boy. A boy who had come close to his mother, but not close enough. And in that moment, he could not combine those words into anything suitable or sensible. So he simply returned his gaze to his hands, staring at them until Alars gave up and left. It didn't take long. Alars always had something more important to do. Chapter 3. As time passed, Thanos and Sintag grew inseparable. One day they ventured out beyond the boundaries of the Eternal City and climbed into the foothills surrounding the range of cryovolcanoes that studded the land around the city. From this vantage point, they could see the entirety of the Eternal City beneath them, the drifting anti-grav buildings, the towering edifice needles that blossomed into metal and glass flowers at their apexes, the slick black of the streets, so congested with solar traffic, and in the center of it all, the Mentorplex. Rising over 500 stories above the ground, it began as a slender pin, its shape warping like a sine wave turned on its side as it rose higher and higher, eventually unfolding into a perfect disk at its zenith. It would provide housing for tens of thousands of Titans. It had been designed by Alars as the paradigm for all new construction in the Eternal City, growing up, up, ever up, as more and more people required homes. Alars was personally overseeing its construction, and he was obsessed with making it absolutely perfect.
The Mentorplex is the future of Titan,
he told Thanos in a rare moment of sharing and excitement. He stroked the air, rotating a hologram of the building.
With many such buildings, we will change the landscape and the future of Titan, even as we change the skyline of the Eternal City.
The building generated vast heat as a result of its energy requirements, but Alars had, brilliantly, Thanos admitted, mitigated this problem by redirecting the native, subterranean, nearly frozen ammonia from beneath the nearby cryovolcanoes to act as a natural coolant. Now, gazing into the valley, at the city that was the only home he knew, Thanos felt a disturbance at his core. He couldn't identify it. He only knew that something was off. Something was askew in some way that he did not yet understand.
There is something wrong with Titan,
he thought.
What did you say?
Sintah asked, and Thanos realized that he had spoken aloud, much to his surprise. Lying never even occurred to him. Sintah was his friend, and friends spoke truth.
There is something wrong with Titan, Thanos told him. Can't you feel it?
Sintah shrugged. All I feel is a breeze coming off the cryovolcanoes. Are you sure they're dormant?
Most are, Thanos said airily. But truly, Sintah, there is a rot in Titan. I've often thought it was me.
Thanos. He waved off his friend's concern.
I see now that it's something else.
He stood and gazed down on the Eternal City. Lit by millions of quantum-powered diodes, the city was a sketch made of light, a pulsating circuit board laid out in exacting lines and meticulously mapped plots of land. There was no name for it, merely the identifier, the truth, the Eternal City. Sintah rose as well and slung an arm around Thanos' shoulders.
We have everything here. There's nothing wrong. You're just... Mordant?
Thanos suggested.
I don't know that word,
Sintah admitted.
But it sounds about right.
Thanos brooded, staring straight ahead. Something was wrong. Something he could not identify. And for the first time in his life, the wrongness wasn't him. On their way back from the edge of the Eternal City, they encountered a cluttered moving walkway, jammed with pedestrians. Mornings and twilight were congested like this, as the Eternal City's work shifts swapped places. Thanos and Sintah threaded their way carefully through the throngs, making slow but steady progress against the wave of commuters. There was little room to maneuver, and without realizing it, Thanos was soon rammed into by a man walking hurriedly in the opposite direction. Thanos was a child, but he was big and solid. The man stumbled, slewed to one side, and tried to replant his foot to stay upright. Unfortunately, his foot slipped into the groove where the moving walkway met the berm, shifting his center of gravity. Thanos understood too well the physics of it as he watched the man lurch to one side, almost catch himself, then continue down. He also understood what the loud crack meant, even before the man, now prone, grabbed at his ankle and screamed in pain. The crowd noticed only insofar as it rerouted itself around the clot in the commutation stream. Thanos grabbed Sintah by the wrist.
We should help him,
he insisted, dragging Sintah off the walkway and to the man's side. The man was still stuck in the groove, his leg twisted at an unnatural and painful angle. Thanos crouched down, surveying the area.
I need you to stand up, Thanos told the man. We'll help support you.
You did this to me,
the man whined through clenched teeth. His eyes were shut against the pain.
You knocked me over,
Sintah fumed.
You walked into him.
Thanos shushed his friend with a glance and gestured for him to help, but Sintah obstinately refused, shaking his head and folding his arms over his chest. So Thanos slipped his hands under the man's leg and levered it up, trying to straighten it enough to get his foot out of the groove. The man howled in new pain.
Stop fighting me,
Thanos said, struggling with the writhing limb.
It will only hurt for a moment, and then you'll be free.
The man's eyes flew open, and fear overrode the pain.
What are you doing to me?
He demanded.
Help! Help! I am helping,
Thanos told him. Another centimeter, maybe two, and he'd be able to slip the man's foot out of the groove.
Help me!
The man cried out, a new urgency and terror in his voice.
Stay still or try to stand, Thanos insisted. I can get you free.
Stop him!
The man howled.
Someone stop him!
Thanos?
Thanos looked up at Sintah, then over to the crowd. The man's fear seemed to reach out and plunge into the crowd. People stopped, turned. They stared at Thanos, who was trying to pull the man free from the walkway groove, which would be an easier task if that leg would stop jittering and moving around.
You,
Thanos commanded, pointing to a man in the crowd.
Get Get on the other side. Stabilize his leg.
The man did nothing.
Did you not hear me?
Thanos demanded.
He's in pain.
When the man still demurred, Thanos barked his order at someone else, a woman standing nearby. She too shrank away.
Get help!
The injured man cried.
He pushed me down! He's trying to rip my foot off!
What? Thanos turned away from the crowd.
I did no such thing!
He didn't, Sinta offered. But Thanos could tell from the man's expression that he would continue to cling stubbornly to his blinkered version of events. And now Thanos heard muttering from the crowd. Heard his own name. His father's. He was known, of course. He wore an indelible form of identification. The man lying next to him moaned as the pain overcame him. Thanos saw a bit of bone breaking through the surface of the ankle, along with fresh blood. If the man had stopped thrashing, if he'd just let Thanos help.
You would rather suffer than...
Thanos, Sinta interrupted, putting a hand on his shoulder.
We should go.
Thanos didn't want to go. He had a case to make, and it was persuasive. But a tremble in his friend's voice made him reassess the situation. The crowd's fear was quickly corroding into anger and outrage. They were many, and he was one. He let Sinta help him to his feet, and then they pushed their way through the crowd. It parted almost reluctantly, and raced away.
That could have gotten ugly,
Sinta said. Thanos marveled at his friend's comment. It had gotten ugly. For all the wrong reasons. Random chance and brute serendipity had met up with prejudice, and the result was anything but pretty. When he returned home, his mien was so despondent and his affect so maudlin that even his father could not help but to notice. With a resigned sigh, Alars grudgingly asked what was wrong. When Thanos related the events on the walkway to his father, Alars merely shook his head.
You should have known better, he said,
and returned to his work. Thanos decided then and there. He would venture outside only when absolutely necessary. There was no point to doing otherwise. Years later, Thanos stood atop the Mentorplex, gazing out onto the sprawl of the Eternal City beneath him, out to the rolling foothills where, a decade past, he and Sinta had sat and watched the hovering robots build the very edifice in which he now lived with his father. Alars had reserved the top of the Mentorplex for himself. Of course. Of course, his father would want to look down on the rest of Titan, the way he looked down on his only son. Thanos imagined he could espy the exact spot where he'd sat on that day, even though he knew that was a foolish conceit. 10 years had passed in the blink of an eye, and he had spent that time doing his level best to forget the childish ways of his past and move into his future. He'd applied himself to his studies with a diligence and an intensity that even his father noted. He understood the complexities of physics and biology, astronomy and chemistry. He could identify stars and planets with a glance at the night sky. Could manipulate energies to create astonishingly lifelike images that spoke and moved, their fidelity far beyond the crude holograms of Titan's technology. He could scrutinize living tissue on the subcellular level, tweaking mitochondria and lysosomes to engender new life. And he had done his best to forget Suisan. His mind, when pressed into service, was capable of many things, and so he commanded himself to forget her. But it was impossible. He could push her aside for weeks or months at a time, yet she always returned to him. He dreamed her face, enormous and pained and weeping. It was her face at the moment of his birth, he imagined. No one could remember the moment of birth, he knew, and yet with frightful regularity, he dreamed of it anyway, and was convinced it was a memory, not an invention of his subconscious. 2 years ago, he had finally uncovered proof positive that Alars had bribed Sinta's family into providing friendship for Thanos, living quarters in the much sought-after Mentorplex upon its completion. Alars had said not a word when presented with the proof,
But since then, Thanos had not seen Cinta, had spent most of his time at home, pursuing his endless studies. His subsequent loneliness eventually overcame his reticence, and in those 2 years, he'd tried going out, being among his people. But he could not bear the expressions on people's faces, the barely suppressed horror, the outright revulsion. His parents' reaction to him had set the precedent. His decision from years ago was the right one. But was he really so monstrous? He wondered. Was he truly such a vile creature? Or was it just the perception of others? A look in a mirror, reluctantly, confirmed it. Yes. Yes, he was. And yet he wondered, could it really be something as simple, as superficial, as the color of his skin, and the raked sand slant of his broad chin that cast such fear into them? Were the people of Titan, his people, such cowards that they could be terrified by something literally skin deep? Titans were more sophisticated than to cleave to ancient superstitions, but they still associated purple with death, with misfortune, as though the photorefractive properties of a substance had anything at all to do with... He sighed. It exhausted him just thinking about it. He couldn't believe it to be true. It had to be something else. He knew he was unusual. Appearance aside, his intelligence cast him apart from others. With each day, he grew smarter and more cunning. He understood more and more, though he could not understand the fear of the others. The disgust he sensed in Alars? Yes, he understood that. He was a wretched creature, he knew, and as he grew, he became only more threatening. His shoulders broadened, his muscles swelled. He was a brute, a genius intellect trapped in the over-muscled body of a laborer. He did not glide, he stomped. Even at his most cautious, he elbowed and shouldered people out of his way. He'd long ago given up apologizing. No one was listening. He was getting older. Soon he would need to make his way in the world, not above it. He would have to go out into the city as a citizen, as his own person. How could he do that when he was rejected at every turn? In a rare moment of utter desperation, he confronted Alars with that very question, seeking an explanation, looking for some kernel of wisdom that had eluded him thus far, something he could exploit to change the hearts and minds of Titan. It came on a night when Alars approached Thanos in his room. It was late, and Thanos was exhausted, his eyes burning from long hours spent studying his own DNA, the double helix holograms twisting and turning at his direction, offering no answers as to how he'd become such a creature. Perhaps with a DNA sample from his mother. Sitting at his desk, he slumped in his chair, then rested his weary forehead on the palm of one too large hand. If his genius could not decode his own deviance, it was useless. Alars, as always, entered without knocking or asking the home's intelligence to announce him. His voice startled Thanos, who resisted the impulse to jump in surprise.
"I just wanted to remind you that I'll be leaving for the Rakdor crater in the morning,"
Alars told him.
"My geographical survey will have me away for 3 nights. Remember to stay in the house,"
Thanos grumbled.
"Yes, I know. Stay inside as much as possible, lest the mere sight of me send a fatal shockwave through Titanian society. I've absorbed that lesson." "Your sarcasm is noted and unappreciated."
Thanos spun around in his chair.
"They hate me, Father. They fear me. For nothing I've done. Nothing at all."
As ever, Alars's empathy was non-existent.
"Yes, and there is nothing you can do about that."
Thanos groaned and stood, swinging his arms about aimlessly.
"Why? What have I done?"
Alars crossed his arms over his chest and regarded his son coolly.
"As you've already said, nothing. Every species in the universe has an instinctive fear of its predator." "Predator?"
Thanos groaned again, in discontent, in anguish.
"Whom have I preyed upon?"
For a moment, the memory of his time at the hospital flickered. It was actually, he later learned, called a psychosylum, and it was not a place to heal injuries or wounds. His memory of it was as real and as alive as it had been in those instants. The synthetic blood, so slick and so real on his fists. But Alars owned the psychosylum, and the synthetics within who ran it. He'd covered up Thanos' moment of childish violence. No one knew.
"You are intelligent," his father said. "And your intelligence brings with it a remove, a distance from others. At an unconscious level, others pick up on this. They interpret it as ruthlessness, as a threat. Combined with your appearance, they feel fear. And inevitably, what they fear, they hate."
His father said it all so matter-of-factly, so coldly, that for a moment Thanos thought that perhaps this was not so bad. But then the meaning of the words sank in, and his shoulders slumped as he realized exactly what his father was saying.
"Then there's nothing I can do," he said. "They hate me for no reason, so there is no logic I can apply, no rationale I can expound that will change their minds."
"No," Alars said with firm finality. "Put it out of your mind. You are as you are, and the world is as the world is. You can change neither."
"Then what am I to do with my life?" Thanos cried. "How am I to find my way if I am hated and feared at every turn?"
Alars stood silent and still for so long that Thanos wondered if he had at last stumped the great man. A savage satisfaction coursed through him, and his lips quirked into a grin. But then Alars merely shrugged.
"Every creature finds its way. Even dung has its purpose, Thanos. You will find yours."
Before Thanos could respond, his father left, the door whispering shut behind, leaving Thanos alone with a useless, crooked smile, and the certainty that his own father thought he was dung.
Chapter 4. So he stood alone atop the Mentorplex, atop the world. In the distance, robots glided and drifted, hauling titanium and aluminum sheets, grafting them to the central spine of what would be Mentorplex 2, built in the remains of the Rakdor crater. More living space for more people. A tone sounded, and Thanos turned to the door in surprise. His father was gone, and everyone knew it. There was no reason for visitors. The door camera showed Cinta, shifting impatiently from foot to foot as he waited. His friend had grown more than 15 centis. His hair was now long and sleek, spiked in front and on top, then falling to his shoulders in the back. He had an effortless ease about him, a sense of relaxation that Thanos envied.
"What are you doing here?"
Thanos asked, thumbing the control that allowed him to speak to the outer corridor. Cinta glanced around until he found the camera, then looked straight into it. "What a ridiculous question, especially for a genius. I'm here to see you."
Thanos pursed his lips.
"Go away,"
he said, and thumbed off the camera. A moment later, the door vibrated with impact and a rhythmic thumping. Cinta, the barbarian, was actually striking the door with his fist. Thanos re-engaged the camera and watched in amazement.
"Let me in!" Cinta shouted, barely audible through the door. "I won't leave until you let me in, Thanos!"
Cinta's abrupt irrationality caused annoyance to war with concern within Thanos. After a few moments of the insistent pounding, Thanos relented and opened the door. Standing in the doorframe, winded, his hair in disarray from his exertions, Cinta managed a lopsided grin.
"There," he panted. "Was that so hard?"
And when Thanos said nothing,
"Now is the part where you invite me in?"
"Come in?"
It was more a question than an invitation, but Cinta took it as a welcome and strode inside, smoothing back his hair along the nape of his neck as he did so.
"Thanks."
The anteroom was large and spare, in the Titan style. Its walls curved gently from floor to ceiling,
giving the sense of being enclosed in a large, comfortable egg. A massive picture window formed one wall,